Okay, well, good morning to all the folks on the West Coast, and good afternoon to the East Coasters. Thanks for taking time, and welcome to April's webinar for Channel Masters. It's Raleigh and Lisa, and I have to say that today I am very pleased to introduce one of the newest iPad consultants to join our organization, John Gray. And I'm really pleased because he's not necessarily new just to the organization. John and I go way back, and I'm going to do a little bit of way back, which is really kind of fun. John and I worked together for the first time at Lotus, and, well, John, I'd say half the people on the call aren't old enough to even remember Lotus, so that's why this is cool.
They'll ask if that's the car company.
Exactly. That is not true at all. I definitely remember Lotus.
So we have at least one. So, and when we think about it, that's where John really started learning the channel in his background. Lotus and IBM came together. John and I worked again at IBM and from IBM. We had a chance to work again together at BEA and then at Oracle. And then John went on to lead sales, indirect sales, all kinds of very creative opportunities at LivePerson, at New Relic, at Datadog. This is a gentleman who's worked not only with systems integrators on a global basis, he's worked with ISVs on a global basis, embedded resell VARs. He's basically done it all. So we're really very pleased. This is his first Channel Masters opportunity. And for those of you who are recommending your friends and colleagues for Channel Masters coming up, John will be joining us for the entire Channel Masters session there as well. So just keep that in mind. So it was with great pleasure that I say somebody that I respect tremendously in the industry, I'm going to turn the call over to him. And John, it is all yours.
Thank you so much, Raleigh. And I have to say, Raleigh has taught me a lot of what I know over the years, and it's always been a huge honor, and I have a huge amount of respect for Raleigh. So thank you for the kind introduction. Okay, so totally excited to be here and being a part of the Channel Masters series. Today's webinar, we're going to really talk about cloud readiness and the channel around that. So basically, we're really going to be focused in on kind of the cloud leading indicators and kind of where the cloud is going. We're going to be talking about cloud by the numbers, kind of let's validate what we're saying. We're going to be talking about what's driving customers to the cloud, and then we're going to talk a bit about the channel impact and opportunity. So title of this is Changing Face of the Channel as a Result of Public Cloud Platforms, and clearly our goal here is to help you as channel leaders understand what is driving the market, substantiate the numbers for you, help you understand, you know, where the customers are being driven to and or where they're driving, if you like, the vendors out there. And then, you know, from a channel perspective, where we can drive opportunity for you as channel leaders driving programs within your organizations. In terms of questions, if any of you do have questions, please don't hesitate as we're going through the presentation. If there's anything in particular you want to ask, you can certainly ask aloud if you wish to. I think we've got chat set up as well, so you're welcome to insert that into chat. I will tell you, I'm not always the most alert in terms of paying attention to the chat feature, but I'll do my best. And, you know, again, my goal here is to help you understand more about what's going on relative to cloud and the channel, so don't hesitate to ask any questions. All right, let's get rolling. So, you know, as Raleigh quoted, we've worked together at companies like Oracle and others. And I will tell you that, you know, I've sat on many an earnings call over the last few years where there's, you know, CEOs of quite a number of companies that were kind of denying that the cloud even existed or that it was not a real model or that, you know, that company is only really trying to emulate the agency model from the 60s and 70s. And the cloud wasn't real. And, you know, I will tell you that from a career point of view, my goal was to try and immerse myself in the cloud. I saw it as the tsunami that was coming. And from a career point of view, when you see that kind of size and shift in the economy, you want to make sure that from a career point of view, you've got yourself kind of immersed in that model. What does it mean in terms of pricing, contracts, go-to-market, all of those kinds of things? Well, guess what? The tsunami is here. It's not just coming. It is now here. And, you know, those naysayers that existed a few years ago saying, you know, really, it's not a real model. It's not going to happen. We're ignoring it. You know, ignore other companies that are talking about it. It's here. For anybody that, you know, pays attention to the earnings call, Amazon had their earnings call yesterday. And what they announced was that for their AWS business, they report out separately that basically AWS net sales have now reached $19.2 billion in terms of net annualized revenue. And I think their growth rate Q1 of this year over Q1 of last year was something like 46%. So not only is the tsunami here, not only are the numbers massive, but also the growth that these companies are experiencing around their cloud platform business and everything else that's associated with that are deep double-digit numbers, which tells us that the customers are demanding it, the customers are driving it, the customers are dedicating budget to it. So it's kind of like we all need to pay attention because that's where the customers are taking it. Certainly when I joined one of my first cloud companies, I will be honest with you, I'd heard this term cloud, I hear SaaS, I hear all of these terms, and it can often be incredibly confusing. So for maybe some of you that are on the call who don't know what each of these terms mean, cloud really for me, or public cloud, is a catch-all for these three pillars. So if you think today about the on-prem servers or networking or virtualization and those kinds of things, in the cloud world, that would be known as infrastructure as a service, and you'll see that on the far left of the screen. So think of Amazon, Google, Microsoft Azure, and others. They're basically, and a lot of the market has been driven from customers saying, we no longer want to look after our own infrastructure. We want to basically run our application workloads on someone else's, a public cloud platform like AWS and what have you. Moving up that stack then, think about middleware. When a company develops an application, they need an application platform upon which to run that, and that would be platform as a service. And there's, you know, players like Pivotal and Heroku and a whole bunch of others, as well as the AWS's and the Microsoft, that have what we would call platform as a service upon which companies are building applications and running that on the middleware and the servers, all being hosted by those kinds of companies. And then at the application end of things, software as a service is really where, you know, customers can consume. It's where they can build their own applications. It's where they can purchase software as a service applications that run on the PaaS and the IaaS, or infrastructure as a service platform, that we've just talked about. So I wanted to just share that with you because it can often be very confusing of like, well, what's IaaS and what's PaaS and what's cloud and what's the difference between all of these things? So I wanted to put some context around that for you. I think that, you know, the conversation kind of needs to start with the numbers, because this thing is going like a train, and, you know, there's a journey that customers are on. That journey starts off with customers and enterprises with their own data centers, dipping their toe in the water, really going after the what we call kind of low-hanging fruit of what are the application workloads that are, I'll call it, least sensitive, least vulnerable, that they feel most comfortable in taking to the cloud. So they then go on this journey where they've got a combination of their, I'll call it, applications and workloads in their organization that are kept private, in private cloud, or they're put onto public, which is where you end up with a public versus hybrid versus private cloud only. Now, some just interesting statistics here. So roughly 92% are adopting public cloud in some form or another. This is actually data from RightScale, their 2018 State of the Cloud report that has only recently just come out. But there is about a 96% overall adoption rate going on right now. And in fact, Accenture just did a recent report that said that roughly 92% of enterprises are in some form of hybrid cloud adoption. Typically, that means that the bulk of their workloads are still on-prem in their own data center, but roughly 92% of those enterprises have got some percent of workloads that they're now running on public cloud in order to test and satisfy themselves that this is meaningful, that the service is secure, that basically they can scale, and that it delivers on the promise of the other things that they're looking for, and I'll talk about that in a minute. In terms of the actual public cloud adoption, who are customers moving to? Well, the three primary players, or four, I should say, are really AWS, Azure, Google, and IBM. And AWS, as we talked about a few minutes ago, was really very entrepreneurial. They were really the guys at the tip of the spear of this about 8 to 10 years ago, who basically said, if we're building this infrastructure for our own business, the e-commerce business, why don't we go out and why don't we sell the ability for companies to rent our infrastructure to run their businesses on that? And, of course, the rest is history, as they say, in terms of how successful that's been, to the point now where they report out, you know, they have a separate organization called AWS, not spun off, but certainly a part of Amazon, and they report out separately on that business. And, of course, that has led other companies then to follow suit in developing their own infrastructure as a service offerings, Google, IBM, Azure, et cetera. But most definitely the pioneers around this were AWS at the time. In terms of just some dynamics around public cloud adoption, today AWS has about, I think, 46% of the market. But what is interesting is that over the last year, Azure has really caught up in terms of revenue. So in terms of the $19.2 billion, I think at the end of 2017, Azure was around the $18.6 billion ARR mark in terms of the revenue that they were driving. So they're catching up. They're still, I think, quite a bit lower in terms of market share, but they are most definitely catching up. The other interesting dynamic here, and we're going to talk about this, I think, on the next slide, so I'll move to that, is multi-cloud. So if you're Disney or you're GE or any of these large enterprises, you don't want a repeat of the days of the 2000s, if you like, where you had what I would call lock-in with certain vendors. You'd signed an agreement, and basically it was a perpetual license, and, you know, that perpetual license meant you owned the ability to use that software forever, and the terms were so onerous by the vendor on you, the customer, you were completely locked into that vendor. Well, that world is all being massively disrupted and changed. And what we have now is basically a situation where customers are saying, look, we do not want to end up in the same situation as we were. We want to basically go with the market leader, or we want to go with one of the top three. And we also want to have two or even three public cloud platforms against which we run our application workloads. And we want those to be able to kind of transfer data across each of those different platforms. They might have them in different business units, but most definitely the trend line that we're seeing is that on average, customers are using 4.8 clouds across public and private, but on a public cloud only basis, they're averaging about 1.7 public clouds. And they're experimenting with at least one other. Very important point, because from a channel point of view, what that says is that, A, from a third-party SaaS product point of view, they need to make sure their products can run across more than just one public cloud platform. And separately, you know, from a services point of view and from a channel's point of view, there's opportunity there to be helping customers with that multi-cloud story, because, of course, a vendor like an AWS isn't necessarily going to go out of their way to make sure that their stuff works well with another public cloud platform. That represents opportunity. In terms of spend, 26% of enterprises are spending greater than $6 million a year, and this is growing pretty rapidly. 71% have said they're going to grow their spend by at least 20% this year, and 62% of that of the SMBs will grow spend at least 20%. So all leading indicators are that this is big and it's growing and it's deep double-digit growth pretty much across the board. So then, Gartner has recently come out with a forecast. Gartner has, as many of you know, many different quadrants that they look at. But in terms of a breakdown of kind of the different cloud businesses that they see and kind of that rate of growth, the numbers again reinforce everything that the different research that we've done and the kind of the fact sets that we've looked at, the numbers don't lie. So in 2018, it's reckoned that across the cloud kind of market, and I think all of you can see on the slide kind of the breakdown that Gartner has provided there, and you'll see infrastructure as a service, you'll see software as a service, and you'll also see PaaS and BPaaS. But roughly this year, they reckon there's going to be about $306 billion spent across those sectors by customers on moving to cloud or accelerating cloud or deploying cloud services or solutions this year. That's going to grow to $356 billion in 2019 and $412 billion in 2020. So the tsunami is most definitely here, and this is only picking up pace and gobbling up more market share in pretty large numbers. By 2021, it's estimated that 28% of the total market revenue will have shifted to the cloud, and basically 70% of the public cloud services revenue will be dominated by the top 10 public cloud providers, and some of those I've talked to you about. So, and certainly the larger of these, the Amazons, the Microsofts, the Googles, continue to really establish strong stakeholder positions in the top five in terms of market share. And, you know, off the back of that, then, the cloud impact has now driven, and this is an incredibly important point, probably for a lot of you on the phone, that momentum, those numbers, that rate of growth is now driving the major software vendors from that on-prem business over to the cloud subscription models. And, you know, doesn't matter now whether it's storage, whether it's hardware, whether it's appliances, whether it's, middleware, whether it's software, it's across the board. I've only been on board here at iPad for a few short months, but I'm already engaged with working with a number of great companies out there, helping them figure out their cloud migration strategy as they're launching new products as a service, launching new appliances as a service, because the ripple effect in terms of the things that need to be thought about, whether it's legal agreements or compensation models or pricing models, are pervasive across a vendor's business. All right, let's move on. So what's driving the customers? So, you know, so far what we've talked about is the tsunami is here. We've talked about the numbers because I think numbers are incredibly important to kind of reinforce what's going on and understand what's going on in the market. And what we've really now got is what's driving the customers. So, you know, why are customers spending here? Why are they doing this? What benefit is this to their business? So, you know, number one is agility. This is that the level of competition out there drives customers to need to move a lot faster than they have done previously. And customers are looking to want to spend their IT dollars and their kind of dollars focused around how can I transform my business, how can I transform my model in order that I can move faster than my competitors and I can take more market share. So agility continues to be a driving factor of this. Cost. I think a lot of us will have heard the CapEx to OpEx, but it's true. If you were spending millions last year on capital expenditure and you can transform that into more of a subscription model, that means that you can re-divert those funds that you used to have to spend on capital expenditure to other things to help you be more competitive, to maybe add more people to your business, and to develop better applications to soak up more customers and more market share. New markets. I myself have been involved with vendors where, you know, in the SaaS world, customers see this as a huge opportunity. I can think of one medical company where they had basically an on-prem I'll call it medical application that was basically sold to hospitals for patient care. And the idea was that this application was used when a customer checked in, registered, put through the operating theater, recovery on the other side, and then checked out. But because it was an on-prem solution that they sold to hospitals, there were only hospitals of a certain size that could afford to basically have the IT staff buy it, deploy it, and all that good stuff. Well, with the advent of SaaS, they basically took the same application, they moved it to cloud, they moved it to, you know, a subscription pricing model, and guess what? That then meant that they could take the same application, they then could manage it and run it on behalf of the hospitals they were selling to, but they could go down market into the smaller regional hospitals. So that whole thing about leveraging the cloud and the model to basically open up new markets is real and is happening, and that's another reason why it's driving customers. Next up would be productivity, and it kind of goes to the point I kind of somewhat made earlier around agility. If you're able to move from CapEx to OpEx, in so doing, freeing up budget, it allows you to do two things. One, you're no longer dedicating people to focusing on things like infrastructure and middleware. You can increase your business focus with the resources that you've got onto the applications that you have out in the market and making sure those applications are agile and that you're leveraging the latest technology to make yourself as competitive and as ahead of the market as you can. And then the final one is driving that competitive advantage. I can tell you I was involved with another recent SaaS cloud vendor that I work for around digital transformation, and that was a very well-known coffee company who basically wanted to launch an application such that if you were a regular drinker from this particular coffee store, you could go online through the application. You could say, yep, I want my usual latte, and basically, you know, I'm paying for it now, and I'll be there in 5 minutes, and then basically you would walk in, you'd skip the line, and they would bring the coffee to you because you'd basically ordered that through the application. So every company is looking at how can I use technology, how can I use the cloud to digitally kind of transform my business. And that would be an example of a recent, you know, experience I've been involved in myself because of the involvement in partners as part of that. So moving on then, let's talk about what's changing. Well, guess what? Everything's changing. So yesterday, as I talked about, it was physical hardware and software, and now it's infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service. In terms of the location, it's changing again. It was on-prem, and now it's moving to the cloud. And again, it doesn't matter whether we're talking about storage. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about servers or virtualization or middleware or software. All of it is being turned into a subscription model and as a service, if you like, in the cloud. Delivery. I remember the good old days with Rolene at Lotus, and I remember I was working at a partner before I joined Lotus, and the truck pulled up, and it had Lotus written down the side of the truck, and literally this truck obliterated any sunlight coming into the office building we were in, and it was loaded to the gills with, you know, Lotus Notes, full on, Lotus Notes shrink wrap boxes. This is, I guess, really showing my age. But the point is those days are long gone, right? The box, the CD, all long gone, and it's all delivery via the web, via the cloud, and what have you. And, of course, that is meaning that real-time access to your technology means that customers can get to that a lot better. So, you know, there isn't the physical cost anymore to a vendor of producing the shrink wrap boxes, the installation guides, and all of that good stuff, or the CDs, or even the hardware. It's all being delivered. Your technology, your IP, is now being delivered over the web, and there's significant cost savings to be had out of doing that. However, the other shift is also, you know, what are we shifting that yesterday used to be on the customer? It used to be we would deliver those things to the customer, and we would, as I've heard Mark Hurd, the CEO of Oracle, describe, dump it on their driveway, and then it would be on them to basically unbox it, install it, configure it, debug it, optimize it, support it, manage it, and, right? That has now shifted to be on the vendor. And as a service by default means that it's the vendor that's upgrading, supporting, managing, debugging, and all those, you know, and versioning what is being managed out there as a service for its customers. The buyer, I think one of the other big things that is not talked about often enough is the transformation of the buyer. If you take e-commerce alone, because that's very topical with Amazon's announcements yesterday, you know, what is happening in companies where you've got a CMO is they have been the ones traditionally in charge of the budget for the website and the branding and the logos and kind of what is on the website. Now all of a sudden this massive transformation has occurred where now because of e-commerce on the website, the budget for the CMO is often even bigger than the budget for the IT department, or those lines are getting very blurred. If you're Salesforce, right, the customer you're selling to is the head of sales most often as well as IT. So today the lines are blurred, whereas it used to be a lot purer in terms of who the customer was. That is now changing. In terms of pricing, we're used to a perpetual license with a perpetual price with support and maintenance annually. This is now all upended and is now a subscription model. We're all hearing things around ARR, annual revenue, or MRR, monthly revenue. And, you know, AWS, for example, has just announced pricing to their customers that literally can provide billing down to the second. Now, I'm not sure how many customers really want to get down to billing by the second, but most definitely we're headed rapidly towards what I would call is a consumption model, and subscription is kind of driving us there. Number of vendors. Think of it this way. You know, most of us have come from, I'll call it traditional IT backgrounds, the Oracles, the IBMs, the Microsofts of this world. And yes, you would always have new players come onto the market. Often they would quickly get gobbled up in terms of acquisitions. But think about the dynamics of what's happening today. As an MIT student, you can come up with your own application. You can fire that up onto the web. You can launch a trial, basically, that a customer can instantly access. They can download that trial. They can basically sign on to an e-commerce service and enable that to be bought as a subscription, basically over the web, and there is little interface. There is no need now to go and sign up for a 20-year lease on an office with cubicles and offices and all of those sort of things. In other words, the barrier to entry has come down dramatically, and we've got many, many more vendors because the cost of entry for a cloud company these days to get their software up and running and selling is so much less than it used to be. And arguably, I would say VC money is a lot more accessible than it used to be. And then finally, you know, we've talked about the product moving from physical to kind of a service orientation. So the X as a service economy is here. And so, you know, we've talked about competition. So, you know, what are some of the things that we're seeing? We're seeing that there is increased competition from the disruptors who are finding there is a low barrier kind of cost to entry. Think about lead generation. I will tell you that I was part of New Relic, for example. That business was started on the principle of no salespeople at all. The whole idea was that basically they would put up on the website the ability for DevOps people, not IT people, DevOps people to come online and basically download a trial. And once they would give them a two-week trial, they'd then come on and they could swipe the credit card and they could fire up, you know, live product for whatever things they were looking to monitor. And so the point is that lead gen today, you know, from a traditional model is being very disrupted in terms of these net new SaaS players that are coming onto the market where they're going, yep, you know, we're going to spin up a website. We may need sales. We may not. You know, we're more focused on landing pages. How many other vendor sites can we be on with our service that they can click on a tile, they can land on our landing page, they can fire up a trial, and away we go. So lead generation is very different to what it used to be a few years ago. Commitment, you know, let's talk about that. We've talked about perpetual licensing for multiple years, annual support and maintenance. Now, a commitment could be as much as a month. And so, and what's more, a subscription is you don't pay, you don't renew, then basically our relationship is over and you can easily churn and move on to someone else. So churn and customer retention becomes very important in the SaaS, in the SaaS and cloud world. Lower ASP. If you can have a subscription for 1 month, then, you know, that's only 1 month of revenue that you're getting. And typically you're only paying 1/12 of the price. So there is impact to your bookables and even your deferrals in terms of deferred revenue, because if they're only committing for 1 month, it radically changes the landscape of your balance sheet. And then the cost to run the service. Yesterday, that cost of running your product was on the customer. Now the cost is on the vendor. And then finally, renewal. And we'll talk a bit more about this, but essentially, it's no longer about the renewal. And let me just leave you with one thought on this slide. With a SaaS service or an infrastructure as a service model, the account is live. So think of the electricity that comes into your house. And the electricity company can see whether you are live with electricity in your house or not, and you have metering for that. Well, the same is true with as a service. And so if you sell a customer 50 hosts of something and, you know, 2 weeks on, you as the vendor can go look at that account and say, what have they deployed? Because I can see right there, real time, in that customer's account, what they have deployed, what accounts they've fired up. And so it becomes incredibly important, especially with the subscription model, to re-engage with the customer to make sure they are successful in firing up what you have sold them so that they don't churn at the end of the subscription period. So renewal is now morphing, and certainly any of the as-a-service companies out there all have customer success officers. It's kind of the role that has emerged off the back of this new X as a service economy, because it's not just about the renewal now. It's all about, have they adopted? Have they expanded? Can we upsell them to more of our platform? And can we renew them? Of which now there's this new role that's emerged, which is the customer success rep, to help with that process. All right, moving on then. So all of these impact the channel, right, in one form or another. We've talked about low barrier to entry. So the competition element of, you know, vendors who feel we don't need sales or we don't need a channel is disrupting the marketplace overall in terms of new competition. Utility billing, where resellers, where companies that we work with in the channel are used to that perpetual pricing model and have their sales compensation models tied to that, and now customers are demanding a utility billing model, that is, you know, something, again, that is impacting how we go to market with our channel, how we price out to our customers, how we reward the channel, those kinds of things. Cloud marketplaces. I will tell you that certainly in my last role, I saw the number of enterprises triple each quarter who were saying, hey, you know, we would really like to now start buying through your product, basically through my AWS account, through the AWS marketplace. So the point I'm trying to make here is that really we should not ignore the cloud marketplaces. And certainly if you're a vendor on the line today that has your own marketplace, incredibly valuable. I think, you know, it needs investment. It needs to continue to mature and evolve. But it's really another route to market now in addition to the existing channels that many vendors have. Next would be managed services. Again, on the theme of, you know, just because we're moving technology to the cloud does not mean it's not inherently massively more complex than it ever was previously. So whilst we're changing the delivery model and, you know, customers are signing up for that technology to be delivered as a service, there's still the inherent piece around what are the key drivers. And one of the key drivers I talked about was customers want to get out of the business of running their infrastructure, running their middleware. They want to put their resources and their focus into basically developing applications that make them more competitive and more successful. And so what a lot of companies are doing is they're turning to the managed services community, and they're looking for them to help them with the running of their AWS, business. In other words, where they're running their application workloads on AWS or Google or those kinds of things, they want to turn to a managed services provider to help them run that entire environment, including the third-party products as well. Short-term subscription, you know, we talked about that impacting the channel, massively changes the balance sheet, can be very painful for our channel. Single pane of glass, we talked a bit about this as well, where the account is live, whereas before we would ship a physical product, the channel would probably invoice customers for that. Now it's a single pane of glass. I'm a customer. It's midnight on a Saturday. I work in DevOps at an enterprise customer. I'm basically working on spinning up a new application, and basically I'm going to go online to the vendor, and I'm going to fire up a trial. But actually, you know what? This is so important that I actually need a production access to the product. So I'm going to take out my credit card. I work in DevOps, and I'm basically going to fire up a production instance of that. This is all about speed to adoption. And so where your competitors now are offering that, which a lot of the disruptors are, it is absolutely necessary that we don't slow down customer access to your IP, your technology, if we're going to be successful competing. It doesn't mean that we need to disenfranchise the channel. It just means we need to change the way in which we engage the channel off the back of those customers wanting real-time access to product and the service. Next is multi-cloud. Again, you know, where customers are looking for, which they are, and the facts tell us that they are, where they're looking for more than one cloud, basically there's most definitely impact and opportunity there for our channel. We talked about customer success, and certainly customer success, you know, I will tell you I've just conducted a set of interviews as part of a project I'm on with a number of the channel. And, you know, one of the questions we dug in on was customer success and what percent of the partners that we're looking at are actually investing in customer success programs. And there's quite a few vendors out there, some of which are on the phone today, who basically have now channel customer success programs. And we talked about the importance earlier on this call of where it's no longer shipping a product and you know, dropping it on the driveway. That is a live account. And so the importance of customer success working through the channel, if they handle renewals for companies, to now engage around, has that customer adopted everything that we sold them? Is there expansion that we can bring to the table as we help them, you know, fire up everything that we've sold them or get better productivity out of what they've sold them, so that when we're at the end of the subscription period, they're not simply going to churn and walk away and move to someone else. The next big thing, you know, in impacting the channel, and certainly as I look at the SI community out there, is that a large chunk of revenue historically has always been made out of deploying. If we think about ERP or CRM as on-prem, you know, historically those have always been, you know, back up the bus and offload a large number of consultants who are there to help deploy those on behalf of a customer. Well, guess what? As a service, all of that kind of goes away, or certainly a large part of that deployment work goes away because you're no longer installing software onto servers. But certainly that is replaced by work to help customers do the migration. What is the architecture of moving my on-prem stuff to the cloud? What is the architecture involved in helping me to accelerate the rest of my workloads that I've been kept, you know, I've been keeping within my own data center and putting that onto public cloud? How do I accelerate the services that I can leverage? You know, how can I do digital transformation? All of these are net new services that have emerged out of this. So whilst it's an impact to the channel, I think it's just a change in behavior, a change in thinking, and developing new services to leverage that. And then the final thing would be the lower ASPs that we've already talked about. So moving on then, you know, the anatomy of a cloud partner, you know, certainly as I look at having worked for a SaaS vendor myself, and you can't avoid it. If you want to be successful, you need to look at who are the customers using as their public cloud platform, and you need to make sure you are hitched like a wagon to a train in terms of working with those public cloud platform providers. But that takes a number of different forms. And so what I tried to do on this slide was really talk about the different dimensions of that relationship. So there is the sell-with relationship. Is there the opportunity, and where within the organization would that opportunity exist to kind of sell with that public cloud platform provider, right? An example would be certainly in the public cloud platform provider we were building a channel strategy around, we found that the solutions architects were the best place to go. And that would be because essentially the bulk of the pipeline flowed from the salespeople through to the solutions architects, most often for them to profile and architect the bid for the opportunity. And so pairing up with those solutions architects, which was a smaller population, turned out to be very successful. That public cloud platform as a customer, so selling to them as well. They normally have a separate public sector division within their organization, which has a different management structure and set of people that you need to go partner with as well. Being a first-class citizen, being recognized and making sure you are branding and making aware within that public cloud platform of the services and the product and the IP and the value proposition that you bring to the table. We worked very hard on developing battle cards and silver bullet slides and use cases and case studies that will be put out to the public cloud platform sales organization. Exec ownership. We within our own organization had a quarterly meeting of the senior management team of our own organization to say, basically, are we red, amber, green with the executives within the public cloud platform that we are working with? And that was incredibly important that there was, I'll call it brand awareness, brand go-to-market and brand leverage that we could earn and gain, and we could help move faster in terms of our deployment with the public cloud platform and so on. So there's joint marketing, there's also top partners, and there's enablement, and we're going to talk about the top partners in just a second. All right, cloud trends. So, you know, what's coming up for 2018? And I'm sure that depending on which area of the market you are in, you may have your own view of kind of what the cloud trends are. But just some of the ones that I see based on both experience and also, you know, the different networks that I have, these would be kind of my views on some of the major trends that I see underway in 2018. So cloud migration, I think it's pretty obvious. We've talked about it. We've talked about the fact. Cloud optimization is really the next one, which is what is happening is that a lot of enterprises are deploying the public cloud platforms, and, of course, they've really just done what I would describe as step one, which is, oh, so because we're deploying this public cloud platform, we've moved from CapEx to OpEx, we're going to see all kinds of savings. And what they haven't thought about is, well, we need to have a strategy around usage and billing for the cloud platform that we're deploying or the cloud SaaS services that we're deploying. And, of course, what has happened is business units have run rampant in terms of deploying that across their organizations, and now what they're finding is that usage and even their billing off the back of that usage is running rampant. And so what a lot of them are looking for help with is cloud optimization. When do I need, you know, to have the service? When can I switch the service off? Do I need all of the EC2 instances that I have? So that cloud optimization is becoming very, very important because they're rapidly finding budgets are running out of control. The next would be cloud governance. You know, I think step one, again, for a lot of companies has been the infrastructure piece in terms of deploying infrastructure. And now what they're getting onto is kind of the full-scale cloud governance. Health and billing and usage is part of that, which I just talked about. But the rest is what are the other, I'll call it best-of-breed services, SaaS offerings that we need in order to be successful. Think monitoring, think security, those kinds of things are now ever more important because the last mile is incredibly important for an enterprise customer. Next is multi-cloud. So, you know, we've talked about that. More than one is the theme. And so with that goes the need to manage, control, run, you know, integrate the multi-cloud services that enterprises are deploying. Next is cloud first. So cloud first is, you know, I as a customer have basically migrated the first low-hanging fruit workloads over to AWS or whoever to basically determine that it works. I'm comfortable with it. It's secure. It scales. It gives me the CapEx to OpEx and all of those good things. And I've proven that out. And so what we're now starting to see is that enterprises are now moving to a cloud-first strategy, which is the next step along the journey of, okay, so we've tried it out, and so now because of the advantages and the benefits that we get, we now want to go kind of all in on driving a cloud-first strategy, which means moving the rest of the workloads over to a cloud platform environment. Next is kind of IoT. Huge growth around IoT, and obviously it relies heavily on cloud, and so that is exploding, and of course that's another theme that we're seeing for this year. And then really back to the managing cloud on behalf of cloud, if you like, is the whole movement around cloud services, hybrid, managed services, cloud acceleration, digital transformation. So that continues to be massive in terms of the needs of enterprises. Of course, the big challenge is finding the talent because everyone is after the same talent, but nonetheless, it's a huge demand. So I've talked about, you know, what's impacting the channel. I've talked about what the customers are driving, you know, what's driving their demand for cloud platforms. Let's talk a bit about the channel now. So, you know, number one would be, we talked about in terms of the key trends for 2018 as being cloud migration, cloud optimization, cloud governance, multi-cloud, cloud first, and IoT. So, you know, clearly off the back of that, professional services is going to be huge, whether that be project-based or more kind of recurring packaged. I think both will be true. Number two would be basically customer success. I think that success for a vendor in driving a channel program will absolutely mean that there needs to be a comprehensive kind of customer success program. Certainly, you know, the new upstart kind of disruptors all have customer success programs, and I think where we can succeed in leveraging our channel partners is to deploy kind of successful customer success so that when those subscriptions, whether they be monthly or annually, are fully deployed and the customer is happy and they're looking at how they can expand, not how they can churn. Cloud marketplaces, this is a phenomenal, you know, if you are a channel leader in your organization and you haven't looked at cloud marketplaces, I would certainly recommend it. I would tell you it's very much in its early days. I would tell you that, you know, the revenue promise is still to, I think, happen around cloud marketplaces, but certainly around maturity, what we are seeing is that there is what I call the public cloud marketplace, which is where a lot of providers are listing their products at list price. But there's also now the emergence, certainly for the more mature cloud marketplaces, of what I call the private marketplace, which is where an enterprise has an account with that provider. And basically, they're looking now to leverage that same budget, that same account, to now purchase third-party products at a discounted price, leveraging the budget that they have assigned to that public cloud provider. And I've seen that grow quite dramatically, certainly over the last 3 to 4 quarters, in terms of the number of enterprises looking to leverage the cloud marketplaces. So I would say that, you know, as a vendor, that's certainly something that you'd want to go take a look at. Managed services, I'm not going to repeat that. You know, we talked about it, massive growth in managed services. All I would observe is that whereas there are a lot more pure play, what I would call managed services providers a few years ago, today many, many more different channel partner types are getting in on managed services for obvious reasons. So your resellers and solution providers are all building managed services practices. Your SIs are building managed services practices. your digital agencies are building managed services practices, all for good reason, but there is no such thing, in my opinion, as just, you know, one type of managed services provider these days. They are most definitely appearing in multiple different channel types. Solution providers, incredibly important. You know, we're doing a whole lot of work at the moment, and if any of you have read the census that we've done, you'll know that the solution provider is growing massively, and is growing massively off the back, actually, of deploying managed services practices within their business. And then in terms of embed and bundle, also an avenue and a channel type that should not be ignored. There's plenty of companies, if you think about tools and security offerings and those kinds of things, there's lots of companies out there selling products out to the market where they need to embed and bundle that technology with their technology as a service. So continues to be a big growth area as well. All right, let's move on then to, I wanted to use AWS, this is publicly available information, and just kind of take a slice through the AWS Premier Partner community. And, you know, there's a couple of things I would just observe here. So what you've got on the slide in front of you is top left, you've got MSPs, top right, you've got resellers, bottom right, you've got integration partners, and bottom left, you've got SIs. So, you know, a couple of points. The MSP space for AWS, for all the reasons we've talked about, is growing massively. You'll see the number of logos, and this is just a sampling, but you'll see the number of logos is massively more there than in other spaces. Number two, AWS is putting a lot of importance around their reseller community, you know, both around services, the ability to resell AWS, but also that MSP component as well. Third point I would make is you're seeing a lot of net new logos here. So just as there are important channel partners that we've all known for many, many years, and I could reel off a list in North America that I've worked with over different roles over many years, the big point I would make is there's a lot of new partners emerging who are specialized and born, if you like, in the cloud, right? As in they're born as a partner working solely with cloud vendors. So that should not be ignored as part of any, I would say, vendors' channel strategy, as they're launching net new products that were maybe yesterday on-prem and are tomorrow in the cloud. You know, whilst you, I think, need to look at cloud readiness for your existing community of channel partners, it's an opportunity also to look at what are the born-in-the-cloud partners out there and communities that could be leveraged as well to bring on board selling your as-a-service offerings. And I think that should be looked at as well. So an example, for example, in the SI world on this slide would be Slalom. They did not exist before AWS came along with their public cloud platform, growing like crazy off the back of those cloud migration services and other cloud-related services tied to AWS, just as one example. One final point, and we'll get off this slide, is on integration. If you think about the old world order of where you actually dropped off your product, as Mark Hurd put it, on the driveway, and you left your enterprise customers or customers to decide that they want to deploy this themselves and integrate it with other systems themselves or use an SI to do that, guess what? As now the vendor is the one that's delivering the cloud service or X as a service, guess what happens? Therefore, now those integrations are on you. So, you know, in other words, if you want to be valuable and sticky and relevant versus your competition to your customers in the cloud services that you are selling, it is incredibly important that you are serving up, I'll call it API link services to, I'll call it the complementary as a service platforms, products, et cetera, that sit around the market that you are in. Incredibly important. Yesterday, the customer used to have to either create that integration themselves or maybe go buy it. Today, and I will tell you, the last company I was at They had a dedicated team that sat within the product organization, and all they did all day, every day, was basically build net new integrations to complementary products in the market and maintain those integrations as well. So another shift I would highlight in the move to as a service in the cloud is most definitely, I think, that the responsibility but also the importance of integrations is now very much on the vendor. Let's talk just a bit about, I'm just going to very briefly, we've only got a few minutes left, but, you know, to package all of that up and bring it back around, you know, here is an example customer I worked with a few years ago. They're in the media and entertainment space. They were using multiple clouds. So they were using AWS, they were using Pivotal, they were using Google Cloud Platform across different companies. From a partnering point of view, they're also using Azure, I should say. They were moving from a cloud migration strategy, hybrid cloud, to a cloud-first strategy, moving all of their workloads to the cloud. They were implementing cloud centralization and cloud governance. In other words, they'd allowed business units to kind of make their own decisions, and they decided it was getting out of control and they needed to bring that in. They were looking to get third-party products in to help with that governance strategy, which is where the company I was at came into play. They were working with a very large global SI as part of bringing that entire strategy together, and they were doing the sourcing of the third-party products through a single source global reseller who they were using for procurement purposes. So there is most definitely big opportunity for our channel to make good money out of the growth and the movement of our customers over to the cloud. And with that, let's just move to then the final slide. So, you know, what vendor imperatives would I leave you with? So, again, I think that a lot of the companies that are on the call today are the what I call the bridging vendors. So, basically, have established successful businesses that have been based on-prem for software, hardware, storage, et cetera. Those same companies are in the process of either having already launched or are launching cloud, SaaS, appliance as a service, those kinds of things. So, you know, recommendation number one I would say would be evaluate your kind of channel cloud profile. So number one, what if you had a blank sheet of paper and you were to draw up what would my cloud channel business look like, my cloud channel strategy look like, and therefore the profile of the cloud partners that I need to be successful, I think that's an important exercise to do, and also evaluating the existing channel partners that you have in terms of cloud readiness. Do they have customer success? Are they paying their salespeople on, or at least some part of their sales compensation model around a subscription model, those kinds of things? So, you know, do they have certifications based on your cloud-ready product, those kinds of things? I think that, you know, they're all crying out, having spent the last few days on interviews with many partners, they're all crying out for cloud enablement and education. They probably, like many of us, have been trying to figure out in their businesses where are the opportunities, where do they need to make the investment, how do they make money, and all of those things they need help with from a vendor perspective. Customer success. I've certainly seen a good number of the vendors out there start to launch channel customer success programs. They are very often the meeting point for a customer of multiple products, right? They very often are dealing with our partners, and our partners are dealing with those customers on behalf of multiple different vendors' products. So I think training, certification, and programs around customer success to help the channel move from just a renewals only kind of focus to more of a customer success model is incredibly important. And then finally, evaluating those net new cloud partners and also marketplaces as another maybe route to market for you is maybe something else you should look at. So with that, I'm literally on the hour. I really apologize because I know I haven't stopped to allow any questions. If anybody has any questions right now, I'm happy to take some questions. Or if you want to email me, I am jgray@thechannelcompany.com. I am very, very happy to take offline questions, or if there's any live questions now, don't hesitate to ask.